when we talk about money, we can all feel like we're all talking about the same thing. But if you ask someone, you know, what the money means to them, you can just asking that question, you can find out that there's a whole world of assumptions, whole world of thoughts around it. And so what you find is that, you know, everyone has a different story about money. And not only everyone, but I have a different story about money in every moment, in every relationship, in every transaction. There's something else. It means something else to me. And so if we're talking about money without talking about what it means, we don't know what we're talking about.
Welcome to the Happy Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a podcast for people who look at business differently. It's for founders, freelancers, change makers, and freedom seekers who want to make money, do good, and be happy. We choose the path of the happy entrepreneur not to get rich, but to express ourselves and serve others in the most authentic way we can. Many of us couldn't find our role by working for others, and so we chose to work for ourselves. We took the more uncertain path, not because we wanted to, but because we needed to. We value learning, play, and friendship, and we have a need to make a meaningful impact in the world. By following the path of the happy entrepreneur, we learn as much about ourselves as we do about business. On this podcast, I have conversations with other happy entrepreneurs from different walks of life, industries, and countries. We talk about the journey and about what we learned about ourselves along the way. For us, entrepreneurship isn't just a way to make money, but a journey of self-discovery and growth. If you're on the same path and are looking for inspiration and connection, then this podcast is for you. For this episode, Lawrence and I are joined by the amazing Charles Davies, one of our teachers and guides, and also the founder of How to Be Clear. Charles has devoted most of his working life to trying to understand what clarity is and how it works. He talks to us about money and what it means to us, not in terms of the mechanics of value exchange, but about how our relationship and attitudes to it gives us insight into our inner world. During these uncertain times, our relationship to money is going to manifest itself more strongly in the way we behave and the decisions we make. Learning more about how that works will help you make better decisions. Enjoy.
Get out of this.
Yeah.
And also like how we know you and how this all came about. And I think for people just to know that everyone's going through similar shit in different ways.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is it recorded now?
Well, we are live. I think the Facebook live stream is working.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Last time was a complete nightmare. Well, so we have 23 people watching live. So if you are watching live, please say hello in the chat. It's nice to know that people are actually paying attention. And also, there's a I don't know if you've seen earlier in the chat, there's an option to actually ask a question. So if you have any questions right now, that'd be awesome. That'll also guide our conversation. If you have a question that comes up for you during the while we're chatting, please post it in there, and they'll be easier for us to keep track. And then towards the end of this call, we'll try and address as many of the questions as possible. Hi, Farah. Hi, Leanne. Excellent. Cool. We have people watching.
Real people. Okay.
Yeah. Real people. Real people. So
we're not
for
on
the
Zoom.
Huh?
We're not on Zoom.
And we're not on Zoom.
It feels like being in a different country.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Almost like going out.
Keep this professional, right? We need to intro this properly for people.
Sorry.
Listening.
I'll leave that
not live, okay?
Over to you, Kyle.
Okay. Welcome to the Happy Entrepreneur Live podcast. This is Lawrence and my attempt to bring a little bit of sanity to our lives once a week and to kind of process what's gone on during the week. And to an opportunity to talk to some amazing people to help us reset what's going on so that we feel a little bit more connected to each other, so that we can deal with all the uncertainty that's all over the place. And we are super grateful to have the amazing Charles Davies with us today, our teacher, mentor, friend, guide, funny man. And the theme of this call is how to worry less about money. We're not going to give you any silver bullets. We're not going to tell you how to make loads of money by doing Zoom calls. Oh, damn, sorry.
I'm off.
But we hopefully will give you a space to just share any questions you have. We'll talk about what's going on for us. And through that, hopefully, you'll just feel a little less stressed. But before we go into that, why don't we just check in how you're doing?
Yeah, I'm good. It's warm and sunny here, so I think that's making Easter feel slightly different to last week, maybe. But yeah, I wasn't even aware it was Good Friday, and hence we got this webinar organized. So trying to remember what day it is, never mind what weekend it is, or who am I and what work I'm doing. So yeah, pretty good.
Cool. How are you doing, Charles?
I'm good. I've been out to Aldi this morning already, so I feel like I've, you know, seen the world. and I'm doing all right. It's been I feel like the first couple of weeks when this stuff was landing, I was it felt exhausting, and it felt like there was a lot to process, but without really knowing how or what to do. It just felt like I just have to wait this out to kind of, I guess it's finding some sort of normality, isn't it? Some sort of like, oh, okay, this is how things are now. And I feel a little bit like I'm there now. Like I can say, all right, let's do some things. And then, yeah, I think I was just saying before we came on, feeling kind of a responsibility to be talking about this when it can easily be an extreme situation for a lot of people at the moment, where obviously there's uncertainty. Obviously money can very directly be an issue quite suddenly, I've lost plenty of work, and you guys probably have as well. Well, you've had all kinds of disruption, right? And then knowing that you know, that kind of uncertainty showing up at the best of times is challenging, but on top of like everything else at the moment, it can feel like you have even, I can imagine it can feel like you have even less space, mental, emotional resources or capacity, or just time to yourself probably to deal with it, and maybe a lot less strategies. Like if it's like, oh, I'm feeling stressed, I'll go and get coffee. No, you know, I'll go for a long walk once a day. You know, that it can be a very confronting time, I think, because we can't rely on lots of the things that we might normally rely on, going and seeing a friend to talk something through. So I think it's a smart move for us to be here and have this talk.
So I think there's aspects there where it'd be lovely to talk further around. And what I hear is this kind of balance between being and doing, and how people are tackling that given uncertainty. Before we go into that, it'd be nice to actually get people to know more about you if they haven't met you before, or know more about your work, so to give that a context. And also for those who don't know much about us, we're assuming most of you come through our mailing list, but we've also posted this on Medium, and then some people from LinkedIn. So if you just discovered this and you thought, oh, what's this about in terms of worrying about less about money, and why are these happy startup guys talking about it, maybe we'll just give some context for people to know a bit more. So Lawrence, you know, maybe share with people, you know, who are we, Happy Startup? And why are we called the Happy Entrepreneur, and it's called the Happy Startup School? What's all that about?
Well, hello everyone, first and foremost. I mean, the Happy Startup School, we started, what, seven or eight years ago now. Even last month feels like a lifetime ago. So 7-8 years ago feels like another generation. But yeah, we started with the intention to, at the time, help people start businesses that had more purpose and meaning to them. But over the years, that's evolved much more as our community has grown with us and as we've grown, I think, as people, to really support anyone who wants to do work that matters to them. And that could be entrepreneurs, but I think more than anything, it's a mindset. And so hence this podcast, webinar, call it what you will, is really based around the individual rather than a business or stage of business. And I think that's one thing we've probably always had with us since day one, but maybe it's owning that a bit more, because I think we get our kicks from helping individuals and leaders and helping them to have everything they need to do the thing they want to do. And Charlie's one of the people who's helped us the most over this journey, you know, coming through that transition from running our agency to taking on the Happy Startup School as our main gig, as well as pretty much an ever present at all the events we do, summer camp, altitude. And yeah, many people in our community have been Charlied, so to speak. It's now a verb. Yeah. not that kind of verb.
Well, it's really interesting, and I distinctly remember a situation when we first met Charlie, and then relating to the journey of our work. And love, when we started, it was about teaching tactics and strategies to get businesses, you know, started, as well as taking in account to the happiness. And on that journey ourselves, we learned more about, actually, most people don't get started, not because they don't know how to. There's something else that's blocking them. There's something else that's stopping them, whether it's a fear or a belief. And when we were making that decision between, was it agency, continue the agency, or do Happy Startup School, there was something that Charlie told us, and maybe you can share that, Lawrence, about why we would have something in common.
I can't remember the exact line. It was something to do with, like, if you're a web agency, we've got nothing in common. If you're the Happy Startup School, we've got everything in common. And that really hit home, because we were at the time, I think it's a good example of when you're so close to something, you can't see it yourself. Because, and we find this a lot, you know, coaching a lot of entrepreneurs, is, you know, what's obvious to someone else isn't obvious to you. And so understanding that this almost values match that we have with Charlie and so many other people was around this new thing that we wanted to do. But we were in this kind of predicament of there's the right thing to do, and then there's like the pragmatic, sensible thing to do. And those two things didn't seem to work together. So I think just having another voice and someone whose opinion would be really valued really helped to make that decision easier, as well as the community we'd already built, who were kind of giving us that sort of push over the edge almost. So, yeah, we've seen that happen a lot. And I think Charlie's work so much about clarity. We've learned, I think, the hard way that clarity, when you've got it, gives you access to so much else, and it's almost the bedrock of every decision you have to make as an entrepreneur, I think, is, you know, if you're not clear, then people won't know what you're trying to do, they won't understand what you're trying to do, money might not come in. But as soon as you are clear, then it's almost like a magnet to other people. So I think that's why we're big advocates for Charlie's work, and it's been this journey together to kind of understand what that looks like for people who run teams themselves, as well as, you know, communities like ours. Then it's been this kind of ongoing journey, really, like a lifelong journey of learning.
So, yeah, we're talking a lot about being clear, and I think we should probably get the expert on clarity to maybe share what that means to him, and also give us a bit of a background about your work, Charlie.
Yeah, sure. I think you summed it up really well, Lawrence, of it feels like we're on the same path, in the Happy Startups and then me with my work, where you do such great work of calling the community together and creating these spaces so that people can meet and learn together. And I don't do so much of that. I do a lot more of sitting quietly, trying to work things out, and like taking what I learn and bringing it to people who need help, whether it's, you know, in a workshop or through coaching or through training, mentoring, different things, and seeing what helps, seeing what works. And and it was probably about 6 or 7 years ago that I hit on clarity as being the thread that pulled together all the different things I was working on. But it started off, I think, with like one of my first jobs after uni was working for the Face magazine, which was basically editing stories, writing stories about very creative people in, you know, fashion, art, politics, music, and kind of being confronted with like that these people don't work the way that I've been taught to work. That you know, I've been a very good boy, and you know, got the marks I needed to get, and turned up at the right time for lessons at school, and you know, got however many marks out of 20, whatever it is. But that wasn't what these people were doing. I was sort of saturated in this world where people weren't following rules. They didn't even really have an employer necessarily. And I had two big influences then. One was working with the Chaos Pilot School in Denmark, and seeing this sort of totally different culture of, you know, happy entrepreneurs really, back then, where they were coming from that angle of mindset and how do I need to sort of develop my understanding of myself and the world in order to do the work that I want to do? How do I do the work that I want to do as opposed to just getting a job? And so that's one really big influence. And then the other one was working with a Russian music Svengali in Moscow, Ivan Shapovalov, who was a child psychiatrist, mass psychologist, spin doctor, and ad man who decided to launch a platinum selling girl band by using the sort of knowledge that he gained there in his other sort of disciplines. And it was this thing of just seeing like, this person doesn't operate the way that anyone else I've met in work or school or whatever operates. And we'd go and have meetings with like heads of huge media companies, and it would just be like, what are you doing? How does this work? Where he just wouldn't follow any rules at all. And it was a little bit like being broken.
Mm-hmm.
I went and got some other jobs. It was very hard to just sit and do a job when you see there's these other ways of approaching it. And so I think I spent the next 15 years trying to work out what that was. Like, what is this sort of really creative way of working? What is this way of working that starts from your own vision of what you want to bring to the world, or your own vision, idea of what's needed? And I've had tons of great teachers along the way. One of them, Peter Koenig, introduced me to this whole idea of exploring your relationship with money, which seemed like the weirdest concept in 2005. And so I've been working with him since then. And the work with money is really woven in with the work on clarity. And it's been a big thread. And I've kind of moved into other territory recently, spending a lot of time looking at meditation and at like what we can learn from ancient wisdom and the sort of maybe neglected insights that we can bring into everyday life through them. But just recently, the sort of money has arisen again. There's like, oh, this is, should probably have another chat about this.
Nice.
I remember you saying, I think it might have been the first summer camp many moons ago, something like, you know, you've worked in lots of fields, but found that when you bring up money as a topic, it's almost like a window into someone's soul. How would you kind of, for someone who's never heard anything like that before as a statement, how would you try and get that message across? Because I think one of the things you do well, I think in all the stuff you've done, is not just teaching clarity, but actually clarity in the words and the, maybe because your background in journalism, I'm assuming that helps, but just being able to get a message across in a clear way is something we see people struggle with.
I mean, I think the easiest place to start is just that familiarity. If you can have a really nice evening in a restaurant with your closest friends and have a beautiful time, and then the bill comes and someone's had two bottles of wine and someone else had three starters, and you can just feel, you know, all the oxygen go out of the room, or like all the kind of hidden show up. And then in business as well, you know, you can have a really lovely meeting with someone and you'd be like, okay, well, it'd be really great. You know, we should probably work together. Yeah, you know, I'm really excited about what you're doing. Okay, well, we should probably talk about money, you know.
Mm.
And like, I can say less and less, I find the conversation about money more and more enjoyable. But I know that can often be the bit where I'd almost say, like, if you're starting to work with someone, if you skip the bit about money, you probably miss some really vital information.
Mm.
Because you don't get to that kind of, maybe it can be a reality check of like, okay, are we talking about 100 or 1,000 or 10,000, you know? And I think if we're talking about the reason why it can be so, it can be like a window to people's soul or something like that, is when we talk about money, we can all feel like we're all talking about the same thing. You know, money, right? You know, money. Like, here's my credit card. There's some cash over there, but who uses cash these days?
Carlos has an Apple phone, Apple Watch. Yeah.
And you can think that you're talking about the same thing.
Hmm.
But if you ask someone, you know, what the money means to them, you can, just asking that question, you can find out that there's a whole world of assumptions, whole world of thoughts around it. So I think something we've done in the past, whereas if you just give someone some money for no reason, or ask someone for some money for no reason, like, can I have 20 quid? Why? Oh, just can I have 20 quid? Or you know, oh, can I give you 20 quid? What? Is it all right if I just give you 20 quid? What? And in that moment, one of you might feel like, oh, I'm being really generous. And the other might feel like, oh, you're being really patronizing.
Mm.
Someone might think that that money means survival, or, you know, so like having the money taken away could be a threat to your survival. Or someone else might think that money is a sign of kind of corruption, say, and then being given the money is a threat. Mm. And so what you find is that, you know, everyone has a different story about money. And not only everyone, but I have a different story about money in every moment, in every relationship, in every transaction. There's something else. It means something else to me. And so if we're talking about money without talking about what it means, we don't know what we're talking about.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of work or a lot of stuff below the money. And I was thinking, just to give people a way of maybe a place where we could get to, or where we'd like people to get to this conversation, could you describe maybe a way where how money could really work well in your life, and as an example of where money doesn't work, could really work badly in your life, maybe is to give a bit of a handhold for people, say, oh, I could go that way or I could go that way, and then we can then navigate which way they could go, how they could tackle taking a path that serves them best, if that makes sense.
So I think maybe the first thing to say is there's no wrong story about money. And there's no, or more accurately, there's no right story about money. It's like, I'm not going to say the meaning of money is safety. So there you go, that's done. It's more that you have to accept that it's always going to be changing. Like, if you want to get the best out of a mirror, it's worth knowing that you're going to see something different in there all the time. You know, it's not a painting. The content is always changing. And so if you can look at money that way and accept that, oh, it functions in this way, that you see something different when you look at it, depending on the situation, depending on the context, then paying attention to what the stories are can inform you. you know, can give you insight to what's happening. Whereas not looking at the stories or trying to kind of neglect them or be in conflict with them makes things more difficult. And so I'd say where the trouble comes from with money is when it's kind of like when our story of money gets stuck, right? So if I think that money is one thing, like I assume that money always means power, and then someone offers me some money, and they might be meaning it as a way to help or a sign of love or friendship or whatever it is. If I think, oh, well, money always means power, so they mean power. They're trying to have power over me by giving me this money.
Mm.
Then it means I'm not paying attention to what's happening here and now. I'm holding on to a story that may have been true at some point, you know, that like, you know, in a job or a family relationship or early experience with money or my own, you know, whatever it is. The trouble starts when you kind of fall into like an autopilot of a kind of bias or prejudice that just says, what's happening now is this.
Mm.
When this person's giving me some money or asking for some money, they mean this by it, because that's always the story. And but it's not always the story. You know, it's like saying, I don't need to look in the mirror today because yesterday it looked like this. It's like, no, you have to keep on checking. And so the kind of where you could get to with it is being able to switch from a kind of unquestioning money autopilot, where you bring your bias and prejudice and conditioning to the conversations you have with people and the conversations you have with yourself, and are therefore unable to be clear, unable to see what's happening here and now, unable to make decisions based on what's actually needed here and now. So you move away from that unclear autopilot to a position where you're clear, where you're paying attention to what's happening here and now, where you might notice what stories you have about the money, but you can check them.
It sounds like the first point of a lot of this is just awareness. It's funny when you're talking about the meal, you know, it's just really awkward, isn't it? From, you know, like you said, you get to know someone well with how they react in that situation, I find. But it does bring out the worst in a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
But then I equate that to if I go to see my relatives in Ireland and it's the complete opposite. They're like fighting to pay.
Yeah.
And it's like a battle of wills, and there's a different thing going on there, which it feels like there's a value or some kind of
status
driver. Yeah, well, I'm not trying to judge it, but there's something driving it, which is making them people act in a certain way. So seeing my relatives fighting over each other to pay the bill is about, you know, maybe it's status, or maybe it's just about you know, pride or whatever. There's things going on there. So how do you see that overlapping with sort of people's values in terms of what it is, what's important to them, and how they were brought up, I guess, because I'm guessing a lot of this stuff might come from our parents or our upbringing.
Yeah. So I think of it in terms of commitments. Like when I talk about being clear and all the work around clarity, like recently more and more I'm seeing it comes down to commitment. Mm-hmm. Where when you're having that conversation in the restaurant, like with your relatives or with your friends, what's actually happening is you're meeting their commitment. So what you see when everyone's fighting to pay, they're saying like, no, let me, I'm going to put down 20. No, I'm going to pay 50. I'm going to pay, you know, 100, whatever it is. It sounds like they're talking about the numbers, and it sounds like they're talking about the money, but what they're really doing is they're talking about their commitments.
Mm.
They're saying like, I'm the father here, and in order to be the father, my commitment is to ensure that everyone's provided for. And in order to ensure everyone's provided for, I need to pay for everything. And so then if you say to them, no, let me pay, what they hear is you're telling me that I can't provide and I can't fulfill my role as a father. And so it, and you can see how, you know, the other person could have a totally different story.
Yeah.
You know, where they're like, well, my commitment is for equality, you know, because if you're not equal, then you are unjust. And if you're unjust, then you're harming people and I can't harm people. And they're like, no, no, let me pay. And you're like, are you saying it can't be equal? You're saying I have to harm people? You're saying I'm abusing, you know, like, and so what's happening is we're trying to have a very delicate and quite intense conversation about clearing our different commitments of like, either whose commitment should take priority here, or what do we do about the fact that I'm committed to something and you're committed to something and it, and they're in conflict. We're trying to have that conversation without actually talking about any of it, just by talking about numbers and things instead. And so that's why it explodes, because, you know, it's hard enough to have a conversation about your commitments anyway, even if you were being super explicit about it. And in terms of being clear, the thing with commitments is it's not just thoughts. You're not saying, well, what do you think about money? It's actually about what you're holding on to, you know, what you're feeling. You know, it's not something you can look up in a book, like what's your commitment? It's something that you carry. And so when you're having those conversations about commitments, you have to engage your thinking and your feeling. You know, you have to be there talking about what's true for you in that moment. And so I think really what it comes down to is we maybe don't hold those conversations kind of sacred enough. Like, we don't hold them with enough compassion, friendliness, curiosity. Maybe just not skillfully enough. And if we're busy thinking, oh, well, money is success, so that's it, then it's like we're saying, well, I'm not going to listen to what's happening in me, and I'm not going to listen to what's happening in you, and I'm certainly not going to talk about success, I'm just going to talk about numbers. Then, of course, it's going to be a really difficult conversation.
The thing that strikes me is when you talked about, it's easy to skip over this stuff at the beginning because it sounds like these can be crunchy conversations to have for some people, if not many of us. And I think of someone entering in a relationship with each other. It could be a couple, or even, dare I say it, co-founders. is this a conversation you think people should have early on in their relationship to uncover this stuff, even if it can be just a bit icky for people?
Yeah. I find quite often little scripts really help, you know, like little one-liners or something, where it can feel like such a vast topic. And one thing I've fallen on recently is just saying, so how do you think about money? Right. Where I can't think of it was, but I had a client recently where, you know, we'd had a nice call about how we might work together. We probably chatted for 3/4 of an hour about like, well, we could do this for the rest of the year. We do this many things. Da, 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 da. And it could feel like this is going really nicely. And there's obviously an overlap in what we can do together. But I was feeling like, I don't know how to broach the subject.
There's an elephant in the room.
Yeah, right. And I could feel that if I said, right, well, my fees are this and this, that I might do that in such a way that I didn't allow enough space for them to say what they needed. And if I went the other way and was like, oh, it's you know, it's by donation or it's pay what you can or whatever it is, then I might not be doing enough to say like, well, this is what I need or this is what it means to me or anything like that. Or if I said to them, you know, well, you need to decide, you know, like, I don't have a fixed fee. It's, you know, it can be a way of not taking responsibility for it. And I fell on this line of like, how do you think about money? And what it did was it kind of introduced a step between having a nice conversation about the work we might do, and then the step where you decide how much is paid, or you know, how, like, the deal basically of how much is paid and when and why and on what basis and things like that, introduce this little space in between those two things, which was like, hey, let's have a chat about how, you know, it's kind of our money, personal money culture, you know. And and the first thing that they said was, what? And I was like, well, you know, just, I mean, how do you think about the money when it comes to this sort of work? And then after the initial what, they were like, oh, right. Oh, well, basically, I do this work on a Friday, and that's either my day for doing personal projects or for doing this kind of thing. And so if it's this, then, you know, it would mean that I really like to get paid this and this. But then if it's a project that means something to me, then it's, you know, more like this and this, and there's a window of that, and we could always do that, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, we weren't negotiating. We hadn't hopped straight into, like, well, do you value me, or is this important, or anything like that. It was like showing our cards face up for a little while. And it gave it the space for it to be really interesting. Of like, oh, okay, oh, right, oh, that's, you know. And then it gave me more information, so that when we came down to, like, okay, so how much am I going to pay you, or are you going to pay me, or whatever it was, you could link it into that conversation about what are our commitments, what are our priorities. And what I find is that when you can do that, when your two human alive people sitting next to each other having a conversation about what matters to them, about what's the priority, about what's the commitment, about whether that commitment is fixed or flexible, when that's explicit, it becomes very beautiful, becomes very meaningful, and often, like, wildly entertaining as well, because generally, I think, as a culture, we, you know, in a sort of the business culture I knew growing up, I didn't learn how to do that very well, and I didn't meet many people who knew how to do that very well. And so there can be a huge amount of relief just being able to have that conversation. And so, like I said at the beginning, I think skipping over the money conversation, skipping over, like, making a deal or setting a price or something like that, can mean things are neglected. Mm-hmm. Likewise, I think having a deep conversation about the money, or really curious, exploratory, open conversation about the money can be an accelerator. You know, I found with my sort of various experience with money over the years of giving it, taking it, stealing it out of people's wallets. I haven't stolen it out of people's wallets, but like, that because it can get right into the heart of, like, what matters to you, you know, what's your priority, you get to know each other really quickly. And so it can be like what's the thing, like a hyper speed, like a jump straight into a very meaningful, very trusting relationship beyond the money.
Yeah. For me, it sounds like these are skillful ways to create conversations that connect. And what I'm hearing here is a lot of people, what happens is money becomes this barrier between you two, between some of you and someone else, in terms of, it's like being on opposite sides of a wall. And I see one side of the wall, you see the other side of the wall, and we're just seeing different pictures. And because of that, we're not actually talking to each other. We're talking to this thing in the middle. And I get this sense of, like, when you're able to essentially go see each other's side of the wall, which means inviting someone in around the other side, which feels quite vulnerable. And this is the thing I'm noticing about the challenge with this in a particular business culture, where you have, if you have a perception of business being a very winner takes all, who can dominate, how can I actually grab market share, that can be counterintuitive to having a conversation where you connect and be very clear and honest about what you think your view of money is, because you feel you might be taken advantage of. Because if you let someone in and you have that vulnerable conversation, they have something on you. And so this is the interesting thing for me about the work that we're trying to do with building this community and trying to look at happiness and entrepreneurship. It links into your conversation around money. So how can we have conversations around money that are much more clear, much more open? And to a certain level, my view of money might be this and your view of money about this, but still be able to connect because we have, even though we have completely different value on money. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think, not quite sure what the right metaphor is, but you're saying it can be like a wall between you. And then this way, if you can see each other clearly through the money, because you can see what it means to them and you're showing what it means to you, then you could say, you know, it becomes a window rather than a wall, or it becomes a doorway through the wall. And so it becomes a chance to meet each other, to see each other. And I think in a way it might be a bit of a myth that you know, there is this sort of monolithic business culture of, you know, of pushing and striving and not talking about the money and not being vulnerable and things like that. Because if you talk to people who are really good at sales, that's what they do. You know, they're working out what matters to someone, and they're trying to have that conversation where they uncover what it is. And I think when it's done really well, really good sales is just, you know, it's human connection, isn't it? It's about understand, and it's compassion, you know. And if you tried to sell to people and you had a wall in front of you and they had a wall in front of them and you weren't, you know, connecting, weren't getting through that wall, then you wouldn't be very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one more thing to say about the wall is, obviously it's not the money that's the wall. And obviously if that's the story that we get stuck with, that money is a wall, then it almost will be a wall. And it's not like I'm saying, oh, money is a window and that's the answer. But what might help is if you look at that situation, just the way you described it, Carlos, of like, here's one person, here's another person, here's a wall between them or a window or a gateway, whatever it is. If we put the money to one side, what's actually happening? You know, what's happening between those two people? And I think at a level sort of below money, what we're talking about is if you're self-conscious in a way where you're like in the world, but your mode is primarily one of like self-regard or self-importance, you can end up in this sort of state of drama. You know, where there can be someone sitting in front of you saying, I want to help you. Tell me what you need. I'll give you whatever you want. Like, I don't care what you say. I'm not going to judge you. What do you need? And if you're in your, you know, cave with the wall up, you can be like, oh, I don't know what they're saying, but I'm not going to listen because I'm too worried about money. And like, you know, I'm such a failure because, you know, money is success and I haven't got any. And so I'm, and if you have two people who are in that space of, kind of lost in their own drama, playing out the drama, then you can't see each other and you can't see the world. And so the clarity that I talk about when I talk about clarity isn't available, because you don't know what's happening here and now, because you're off in your own personal theater playing out when someone stole your pocket money when you're 15 and how that's definitely what's happening here and they're going to do it again, or, you know, what you imagine might happen if, you know, you lose all your money and you end up in a ditch. And I think that, you know, the ending up in a ditch was on my mind, particularly when we were thinking about this and how to worry less about money and how to handle our money and our relationship with money at the moment in a time of potential great uncertainty for people. It's sort of this thing of checking, if I'm asking myself, what do I need to do now? What do I need to do today, this week, this month, with my work, with my business, with my money? Is it going to help if I'm devoting all of my time to being up here in my little theater, obsessing about ending up living in a ditch or under a bridge or whatever, is that going to help? Or, and am I going to be clearer if I'm just focused on that all the time? Or is it going to help if I'm able to like, okay, well, that's a possibility that might happen. It might not happen. You know, it's the nature of uncertainty. Don't know. I'm going to put it down and abandon the drama. Like, open up, be vulnerable, turn myself to the world and be confronted by like, okay, what is happening now? Or, you know, what, who is around? Who can help? Who can I help? And it's that clarity of actually being here, being now, and doing what's needed here and now that that gives you the capacity to do what's needed.
So kind of relating to, you know, where we started off with in terms of worrying less about money, what's coming across to me is this idea that the worry is based in the stories. And without understanding the stories, then the worry takes over. So while we're not talking about, okay, you know, there's the tangible issue, right? If money isn't coming in, what do you do? And that's a practical problem. And then there's a less, a deeper challenge of actually what reactions are coming up for me that's stopping me from actually acting and doing anything about it because I don't know where these feelings are coming from. Is that a fair reflection?
Yes, and they're not separate. I don't think there is a kind of, well, on the one hand, there's practical matters of bills and blah, blah, blah. And then on the other hand, this sort of, you know, wafty, airy, fairy, you know, psychological discussion of money. It's like, it in the end, it all comes down to commitment. It all comes down to what you committed to doing. When you think, oh God, I've got to find the money for the rent next month. What you're really saying is I'm committed to finding the money for the rent, or I'm committed to having a roof over my head. And then you have a series of commitments that kind of are how you see yourself doing that, you know, by staying in the job, finding a new job, finding a new client, whatever it might be. And when that sort of strategic plan that you have in your head is invisible to you and unquestioned, then you're a bit limited in how you can move. And like, I might be talking about it quite theoretically, but like what I mean is I know countless times over the years of, you know, running my own business where you can look in the bank account and it's a lot emptier than you'd like it to be. And the scared bit of you just says, check all your emails, you know, like just be on the computer more, spend more time in the office or something like that. And it's because at some point I've baked that into my head as the right response always. You know, if I'm running out of money, then spend more time in the office, because more time in the office means more work, means more money. Boom, there you are, done. And if I don't have the space or capacity or skill or whatever it might be to question that, then I just sit in the office getting more and more worried and more upset and more tired and less helpful to anyone. And the beauty of doing this work, of noticing what stories we're telling about money, is that we can become more firstly aware of what we've committed to, what strategies we're choosing, and secondly, more able to be flexible with them. And so I'm gradually getting more skillful at it, where I've looked at my bank account and been like, oh, there should be more in there. And I felt the urge like, oh, I need to get in the office. I need to, you know, sell things, whatever it is. And I've managed to wait notice how compelling a story that is, that I have no choice. And then take a little time and check, okay, but what do I actually need? And then I use the clear ideas process myself to check, like, okay, what's actually needed? What am I committed to really? And is this going to help? And I actually, just by sitting down and going, when I think of what I need to do, is sitting in the office today the best way of doing it? Most of the time, I can tell when it's a no. I think everyone can tell when it's a no. Mm-hmm. It's just that second voice that says, yeah, but the money means you end up doing it anyway, even though you can kind of feel it's wrong. And so what I've found through this, through like finding some clarity about what the money means and what the stories are, and knowing that they're not fixed and non-negotiable, is I've allowed myself to entertain the possibility of doing the other thing. Like, okay, what if, even though I'm panicking, in fear and feeling like the only option is to sit at my desk, what if I go for a walk in the woods instead? And then I might be able to just feel inside like that is absolutely what I need to do, and still feel the full panic of like, but you can't because you'll die or something. And I've had a couple of weeks where every day I was like, oh, I need to do fearful business mode, and be like cold calling or something. And every morning being like, no, I need to stay the course. Like I need to do, if I ask myself, what do I need to be doing? It's this thing, this, longer term thing. And so do I need to do that today? Yeah, that's what I need to do. And just sort of staying with it and doing what's needed rather than doing what my kind of unquestioned fear tells me is the best thing to do.
That sounds like we had this discussion a bit last week about, there's a lot of talk about using this time that we supposedly have, but I've yet to find it in this period to do the thing we've always wanted to do, whether it's create that online course, write a book, learn the guitar. But I think if money's a worry, which is for a lot of people at the moment, this kind of feeling of sinking, like almost scarcity comes in, like you said, looking at the bank balance and seeing it dwindling or non-existent, doesn't feel like a great place to be creative from. I mean, I think you kind of alluded to that when you said the worst thing you could probably do right now at that moment is go into doing mode and scrambling for any sort of crumbs of comfort almost. So it sounds like just that pause is the starting point, is it, for you to, before reacting?
Oh God, yeah.
Just a quick thing. We have about 10 minutes left, and I'd like to go into questions. So maybe if you finish off with that, and then we'll look at some of the questions that have been posted, if that's okay.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that, Lawrence, is that it's not saying, on the one hand, there's action, which is bad, and on the other hand, they're sort of being all quiet and reflective and passive, which is good. But it's that where if you can hold on long enough to work out what's actually needed and what you're actually committed to in that moment, then when you're working from that place, your action becomes incredibly powerful. And so it's finding that powerful action rather than the sort of half-assed of fear and inner conflict playing out. So yeah, that's all. So go ahead, Carlos.
Great. Well, I think we might tackle some of this as well in the questions, because there's some really interesting ones. A bit of a chunky one as well from Duncan. I'm not sure if we'll be able to tackle that in the way he'd like, but we'll see. But to start off with, Hazel had this question. How do I manage feelings of anxiety and panic around the feeling of not being ready to launch an online business? Have some ideas, but feeling lack of clarity, tech skills, equipment, business plan. She feels the pressure to create a new source of income as the old one is no longer available. So I think it was talking a little bit to what you two were both talking about, this feeling of scarcity, but also a need to create something new. So any initial thoughts? And plus, firstly, Hazel, you're in the right place with a happy startup school. So it's one of the things that we are tackling on a daily basis. But we'd be good to, we'll see how we can answer your question now.
So what I'd say is, what I often find is the like drama of how to do something, or the kind of question of like, am I ready or not ready, can be, is often a sign that the commitment isn't clear enough. You know, the idea for the business isn't quite clear enough. If I take people through the clear ideas process, then if they become clear of like, oh, why am I doing this? Why do I need to do this online business? Like, what's it gonna look like if it's successful? Then the power that comes from kind of being very accurately connected to what matters to you can sort of smash through the drama. And it becomes a sort of, so many times where like people are like, oh, I don't know how to do this, I don't know how to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I get them clear on what they're doing. And I say, well, should we come back to all those questions you had about how you do it? And they're like, no, they're all fine. You know, so like, if it's possible to get clearer and more concentrated, more focused on what you're doing, on what matters in what you're doing, then sometimes you don't even need to engage with the drama or with the fear of like, am I ready or not? Then when it comes to the question of, am I ready or not? What I found is that it's the uncertainty of which position to take that is most disruptive. So like, it's the, am I ready or not? Like not knowing the answer to the question ends up being a barrier. You know, it's almost like someone saying, should I take the left path or the right path? You're like, oh, I don't know whether to take the left path or the right path, then you can't do anything. But what you find is that both paths end up at the same place. And so if you have your beautiful idea for what your, you know, online business is going to be, then if you say, I'm going to start it and not be ready, then you can just be like, oh, okay, I'm committing to starting it despite not being ready. And then you can get this whole kind of exciting feeling of doing something a bit risky, you know, mm-hmm. and putting yourself out there. And it can be kind of fun. Or you can choose the other path and say, like, I'm just going to work on the basis that I am ready. And as soon as you say that, it's almost like you entertain the possibility that maybe I am ready, actually. Your mind will start to look for evidence that that's true. You know, like, I'm going to start my online business, and actually I am ready. You're like, well, yeah, I've been preparing for a lot of years for this. And, you know, if everyone else can work out how to use Zoom in the last 2 weeks, then maybe I can, or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so I think finding a way to happily entertain both possibilities solves the problem, you know, solves the anxiety. Trying to avoid either one or being stuck, you know, between the two paths creates the anxiety.
Cool. I think what you said resonated. Like, when you're asking someone about what it is they're trying to do, when you start with, I think you said, what do you need right now? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And not why you're doing this from, I want to change the world, but what do you need from this? I think we found that when people tune into that, what the need is that's driving it, maybe it's a need for autonomy if they're trying to start their own business for the first time. Once you tune into that, then I think you can embrace that, I'm not ready and it's okay, rather than I need to be ready before I take that first step.
Yeah, like tuning into the appetite.
Another thing I'd offer for you, Hazel, is one of the things that makes us not do anything is fear of failure. And we think, okay, we're not ready, and because we're not ready, it's going to fail. And so if we fail, then we're bad. If you can shift from fear of failure to thinking of the opportunity of actually being able to help someone at some point, and so you're going to start a journey to ultimately help someone, then whether you fail the first time or the second time, it doesn't matter, because what you're trying to do is get to that point of being able to help this person you got in mind at some point. And you'll learn the tech skills, you get the clarity, you find the equipment, you'll write the business plan, because what you want to really do is have a positive impact on someone's life. And that hopefully will also pull you through making a decision of either left or right.
I think that's really beautifully put, Carlos. And I think coming back to that wall or window or wall or gateway, when it's about me, then the wall goes up. You know, if I'm like, oh, am I ready or not? Am I okay or not? Am I going to be safe or not? I'm in my own drama. And I think it's a really reliable way of switching the wall into a window or into a gateway, like you say, of thinking of the other people, thinking of like, your service to the world, your contribution of like who needs the help, who can you help? It draws you out of the drama and into the like reality.
Nice. Cool. I'm conscious we've got a few more questions here. I'm going to start with, all right, we've got Farah here. Let's see if we can tackle her. How can I get to worry less about money if I want to switch to an entrepreneur job while I'm an employee today? So there's a, well, how would you like, I think we've talked to this a bit, but maybe if you want to address it specifically to Farah's question.
I think you might not. from my experience, it can be really nice having a salary, you know, just knowing that the money's going to be there every, or at least being able to tell yourself the story that the money's going to be there every month. There's quite a few, well, salary jobs that I've been in the past where you kind of don't have to think about money at all. You know, as long as you show up in the morning, you leave at the end of the day, the money gets, you know, ends up in your account. And I think it can just be the nature of being an entrepreneur that you have to confront that it might just be up to you to find the money each month, and it might be different amounts of money each month. And so I think you might have to think more about money. We might have to engage more with money. And so the question then is just, does it have to be worry that you bring to it? And I think the answer is no, it doesn't have to be. And I had a conversation with a coach in LA who I'm working with last week. And he said, the thing that he realized was like, oh, what if I didn't have any drama around money? Like, what would that change if I could just, you know, like leave my job, become an entrepreneur, but kind of bake in my commitment is just to have no drama around money, and just whenever it shows up, like, no, I'm not going to do it, and always look for that kind of creative way. I think just doing a few of these things of like asking people what it means to them and having some of those nice conversations about money. Mm-hmm. Will give you the experience of money actually being an opportunity to meet someone well, and get to know someone well. And then, and those moments where it can be confronting can be, you know, valuable lessons and so on. And so I think just having a practice around money, like trying to find a way for it to be fulfilling or creative, for the relationship to be fulfilling and creative. Would be like, and baking that into your life as an entrepreneur, your strategy as an entrepreneur, and say that would be the best way.
Yeah. I often think, like you said, you have to own that relationship to it, that it is part of, feels like, how can I get on a roller coaster without feeling a bit of fear? It's like, you're going to feel a bit of fear.
Don't go on it.
But I also think what might you worry less about? And maybe there's something, another part of your life, Farah, that you won't be worried as much about. Maybe it's a feeling of, I want to create something and I'm hamstrung by the wrong end. So I think it's give and take, it feels like, with this stuff.
But, I like, I'll go back to Charlie's two paths. And there's one path, which is not worrisome. And will be business as usual. I think of going on a holiday. I can go to a holiday I've been to every single year for the past 10 years. I know it's a lovely cottage. I'll stay there, be comfortable. Or I go on this mad adventure, which I don't know how it's going to turn out. It might be scary, but if anything, I will learn something about myself, or I learn something new. And I will worry, but I'm more curious about what I'll discover that's new. And so for me, a lot of this is reframing, not that you're going to not worry less. You can't not worry, but what is out there that could be more exciting and interesting than the different path you could take. Mm-hmm. And maybe that will help you accept the worry because you'll have the excitement.
Yeah. I remember thinking that when I first went freelance, it was scary for the first month or two. Like, oh, I'm no idea what's coming in next month, to, oh, I'm gonna have a lot of time on my hands if I'm not working. So it became exciting, and then it became, well, if it doesn't work, then it's my fault. So how do I make the most of this time to bring in something? And then you get more pragmatic about it, but I find it quite freeing after a while.
I've got one thing to add. I think, so, you know, it's such a promising title, right? How to worry less about money. And I think if the motivation for that is basically how can I feel less, then you've gone down the wrong path. You know, if you're kind of saying, how can I be less confronted by being alive? You're like, well, you know, that might not be, get drunk. Then you'll worry less about money in that moment, you know, whatever. But it's sort of, I think it's about having a better relationship with those moments of confrontation. So if money confronts you, you know, by not being there or by being there or by apparently, you know, asking you to do things you might not want to do or whatever, or promising you can do things you might want to do, then feeling that, letting yourself feel that confrontation and inquiring into it with curiosity and as much clarity as you can muster, I think that's where the most value comes from. You become clearer. You can become clearer through having a relationship with money that is based in curiosity.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Right. We'll have one more question because I'm conscious now we're past the 1 o'clock mark, but there's three votes on this one. So this is, and this is a bit of a chunky one, but we'll see how we can tackle this. How could this lockdown period change our stories about money? Thank you, Ray. do we have anything for that?
We were talking about noisy neighbors, and this thing of like, how can you be playing music that loud when everyone is locked in their houses, and surely you can. And one of the thoughts that, you know, one of the thoughts I had about that was, being locked in your house doesn't automatically make you a better person. Right? I don't think any of these external circumstances necessarily make anything better, because being clear is a skill. You know, it's like tennis or sewing or whatever, cooking. Nothing external really can make you better at playing tennis. You know, you just have to do it. And you have to develop the skill. And so it's like, I think the only thing that's going to change your relationship with money is investing in learning and practicing the skill of relating to it, with or without a lockdown. And so maybe the only way it can help is in the same way with cooking. You know, how can the lockdown help me with my cooking? Is I might have more time to do it, or I might be less distracted. You know, I might be spending more time in my house, and that's where my kitchen is. I might be eating takeout less. And so if you use the lockdown as an opportunity, if you have more time and space, and you use some of that time and space to invest in learning and practicing how to relate to money in a way that's clearer, that's more creative, then you can get some benefit. But like, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen automatically just by locking the door.
Makes me wonder whether, because there's a similar question about all sorts of things around conscious and, you know, say climate change, you know, is this going to change things when we go back to the old world or whatever comes next? And if it sounds like from what you're saying, you can have that space maybe where you have some of these realizations, because I guess some people are thrown into this almost like a forced pause, maybe against their will. But unless you use that time to explore that, then you'll fill it with Netflix or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've watched a lot of Netflix.
Or shouting across the fence at your noisy neighbours.
On one hand, Charlie, I'm with you in that, you know, this lockdown might not necessarily change anyone, and as soon as we're released, we will just run back to our old behaviours and do the same stuff, maybe even faster and harder, because we haven't been able to do it. But, and so in terms of the money stories, I'm not sure how much is going to change. I do hope, though, it's going to change our perception of what's valuable. For instance, having to clap every Thursday at 8 p.m., not even having, just going out and clapping and realizing what people are doing to help and what that means in terms of the value that they are creating and actually how much they've been paid in the past. And I'm talking about key workers and nurses and doctors, et cetera. How that might shift people's perceptions. And also, you know, we're stuck. We can't do anything now. And so I remember someone saying, it's like the world is on pause, and so I don't need to go anywhere. And whether that might permeate into people's minds, like, actually, I don't have to rush.
Yeah, I think one of the things we started off with was, I was talking about bias and conditioning, you know, of like, we learn a whole bunch of stories about what money is or what we should think it means or how we should use it and the most difficult thing when it comes to being flexible in our stories about money is that feeling of like, well, it's just how it is, you know. And I guess the amazing thing that's happened, doesn't feel like it's okay to say amazing about anything to do with what's happened, but like a really significant thing that's happened is there are so many things that you might have always assumed were just how things are that aren't how things are now, you know. So like with the environmental you know, campaigns over in recent years, so many of them have been about like, well, if there's any way of getting people to not fly, and the you know, the biggest response has been like, well, it's not possible, you know, there's nothing that would stop everyone from flying. And it feels like, well, now going back into the world, you can't fall into that unquestioned bias of like, no, everyone has to be flying all the time, because we've seen it, we've experienced that, like, people do stop driving cars, do stop flying, you know, that governments can take, you know, make these huge moves if the commitment is there, you know. And so just having had the experience of seeing that things aren't as fixed as we think they are, that there is actually more flexibility, that experience might bring us more clarity. But then I do think beyond that, you know, that's almost like that's a door opening. It's an opportunity to let go of our bias. And then the question is, you know, will we? And I think that does depend on, are you going to put in the effort to learn how to be clearer, you know, to listen better to yourself and to each other.
Nice. Well, on that note, I'm sorry if we didn't manage to answer all of your questions, but I'm also conscious that, yeah, you've probably got a lot to process at the moment as well. Thank you very much, Charlie. It was awesome having you here and having this conversation. If people want to find out more about the work you do, why don't you let them know how to find you?
So I think the easiest thing is howtobeclear.com. And you can see a little bit about what I do there. And you can just get in touch. So there's a form or an email or whatever. So drop me a line if there's anything that feels useful. And on Medium, I write about it a lot, which you can find through that site, this publication, How to Be Clear.
Nice. The link is in the chat if you want to find out more about Charlie's work. We're going to be here again next week with Shamash Aladina. He is the author of Mindfulness for Dummies. And we're going to be talking about how we can rise to the challenge of, or rise to challenges, basically. So looking forward to that conversation with him. Anything else you want to add, Lawrence?
No, just thanks to everyone for listening in, and it's been, as always, enlightening. And yeah, we do this as much for ourselves, just to have these conversations, really. I always come away feeling energized and more connected. So yeah, thanks, Charlie. And keep writing that poetry, because that's something you didn't talk about. I think I find them particularly calming at times like this. So thanks again for that stuff.
Thanks, Lawrence. Thanks, Carlos. It's been a pleasure, a real pleasure.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Entrepreneur podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Also, if you'd like to learn more about being a happy entrepreneur and want to connect with more people like you, then go to our website, thehappystartupschool.com, and subscribe to our newsletter. Amongst many other things about business and life, we'll help you answer the following questions. How can I serve others by being myself? And how can I discover who I really am by serving others?